Yes, thank you, Haley, and welcome from my side. So this earnings call builds on a presentation which is available for download in PDF format from our homepage under www.adva.com in the About Us/Investors section. Should you not have the presentation in front of you, you may want to access it on the conference calls page in the financial results section of the investor section on that website. Before we will lead you through the presentation, as always, please be informed that this presentation contains forward-looking statements with words such as believes, anticipates, and expects to describe expected revenues and earnings, anticipated demand for networking solutions, internal estimates, and the liquidity. These factors are discussed in greater detail in the Risk and Opportunity Report section of our annual report 2019. Please also be reminded that we provide consolidated pro forma financial results in this presentation solely as supplemental financial information to help the financial community make meaningful comparisons of our operating results from one financial period to another. This pro forma information is not prepared in accordance with IFRS and should not be considered a substitute for historical information presented in accordance with IFRS. Pro forma operating income and loss is calculated prior to non-cash charges related to the stock compensation programs and amortization and impairment of goodwill and acquisition-related intangible assets. Non-recurring expenses related to restructuring measures are not included. Unless stated otherwise, all numbers are presented in euro. We will target to limit this conference call to 60 minutes. As usual, Brian will start and provide a business update and outlook. Then Uli will walk us through our Q3 2020 financials. And finally, we will have sufficient time for your questions, which we'll be happy to answer. Brian, please go ahead with the business update.
Thank you, Stefan. Moving to page 4, Q3 2020 in review. Q3 was the third sequential quarter to be significantly influenced by the global COVID-19 pandemic. The latest news of a second wave with infection rates again increasing in many countries is worrying. Following the relaxation of preventative measures over the summer months, there is now the threat of renewed tightening of lockdown regulations with disruption to people's lives and business operational processes in many places. While many industries are now struggling for economic survival, the topic of information and communications technology, ICT, is increasingly becoming the focus of political discussion. The current crisis shows how important an efficient and robust telecommunications infrastructure is for the functioning of an increasingly digitized economy. After reporting a very strong Q2, our positive financial performance continues. Our Q3 revenues were up 1.1% sequentially and 1.6% year-on-year, reaching €146.7 million. Profitability and net debt improved further, with our pro forma operating income up by 49.5%, reaching €11.1 million, or 7.5% of revenues. Our customer mix is still biased towards communication service providers, or CSPs, and internet content providers, we call them ICPs, responding to the bandwidth demand driven by work from home, video conferencing, and the use of cloud services. Demand for our products and services has been pleasingly robust in the first 9 months of the fiscal year to date, although a bit slower in the past quarter. The third quarter is always subject to influences of the vacation season with a slowdown in business activity in July and August. However, there were no exceptional swings in the year-on-year comparison. Our optical networking portfolio, providing additional bandwidth for fiber optic networks, and our network synchronization technologies, delivering precise timing, won most competitive bidding opportunities due to technology differentiation. We continue to be very strict and disciplined with respect to our OPEX, as committed to in the middle of last year. The positive impact from our cost reduction programs implemented in 2019 continues. Significantly lower travel expenses and a weaker US dollar help us further offset some of the OPEX surprises we have faced due to the COVID-19 crisis. In addition, we still see some supply chain challenges compared to pre-COVID-19 times. Slide 5. Regional revenue developments in times of COVID-19. In the last quarter, we spent a good amount of time discussing the spending behavior of our three customer groups. Today, I want to focus a bit more on the regional trends. Order entry from our largest customer group, communication service providers, continues to be satisfactory. This is especially true for Europe, where network expansion has traditionally been strongly geared to current demand. Thus, further investments and upgrades are being made to adequately support the new data streams from home office, video conferencing, and streaming services, while at the same time they are laying the foundation for 5G. EMEA revenues increased by 2.0% year over year, now representing 54.1% of total revenues. CSPs in North America seem to be a bit more cautious in the second half of this financial year, supported by some of the forecasts from our competitors. The CSPs invested aggressively in the first 6 months and seem to be slowing down with their capacity expansion. Internet content providers' spending was still strong in Q3. Overall, revenues in the Americas decreased by 5.7% on a euro basis. Please note that the decline is exchange-based driven, and the region now contributes 35.8% to global revenues in Q3 2020. Asia-Pacific revenues increased substantially by 36.2%. The contribution of our largest communication service provider in the region continues to be strong after some weakness in 2019, which was driven by regulatory uncertainty. In general and across the APAC region, we showed strength driven from our network synchronization portfolio. Asia-Pacific contributed 10.1% to our total revenues in Q3 2020. And with that, let's move to page 6. Technology demand in times of COVID-19. In addition to the geographical view, I want to add some color to the performance of our technology tripod. Three legs to stand on gives us balance and strength. Our technologies and services are supporting some of the world's most critical network infrastructures, securing digital connectivity in times of social distancing and working from home has become a top priority. We continue to innovate and are aligned with what our customers need most. The demand development has been influenced by the pandemic. Starting in the upper left-hand corner with our cloud access solutions, demand and the upgrade of our product portfolio for this part of our technology tripod was behind our pre-COVID-19 expectations. The portfolio enables CSPs to deliver software-defined, differentiated, and performance-assured wholesale, mobile backhaul, and business services. While the virtual world is thriving, the real economy is hurting, and our customers are seeing a slowdown in demand for innovative enterprise services, leading to weaker demand for our cloud access solutions. In addition, testing and onboarding of innovative virtual solutions continues to be difficult due to reduced levels of staff and limited access to labs, leading to difficulties with the introduction and operationalization of new technologies. Thus, some projects have been delayed. I still want to highlight that since the beginning of last year, we have won 20 new NFV customers, and the acceptance of our new generation 100 gig aggregator devices has been very positive. Going clockwise to the upper right-hand corner of the slide, our biggest revenue generator are cloud interconnect solutions. This optical networking portfolio delivers scalable bandwidth for access, metro, and long-haul networks. We provide high levels of open interworking, programmability, and ease of use. Per my earlier comments, we have seen steady demand from some of our largest CSP customers, especially in Europe, and ICPs, scaling their networks for cloud capacity. And we have had more TerraFlex wins. Last but not least, our network synchronization portfolio, lower left-hand corner of the slide. With these solutions, we provide accurate and scalable frequency and phase synchronization for mobile network infrastructure, but also for other verticals such as utilities, media distribution networks, financial services, distributed databases, and meteorology. The demand from the CSP community for precise timing to achieve better spectrum utilization in mobile networks continues. The revenue contribution of this business unit is growing much faster than the other two, albeit off a smaller base. Our expansion to new verticals looks promising, and the excellent growth rates will continue for years to come. And with that, I'd like to move to my final slide, page number 7, recent wins and momentum. The right-hand side of the slide shows some of the announcements we made over the last 3 months. Our market-leading operating system for virtualized IP applications, Ensemble Activator, is now commercially available, enabling operators to harness the power of disaggregated cell site gateways in their expansion towards 5G. Also, in the context of 5G, we made further enhancements to our OscilloQuartz portfolio, delivering unprecedented precision timing in networks with EPRC and EPRTC support coupled with new software releases. Our FSP 3000 provides highly resilient connectivity throughout Iraq, and one of Europe's most important internet exchanges uses our fiber monitoring solution to increase service reliability and efficiency of their entire fiber infrastructure. Last but not least, we have an interesting use case in Australia, which we won, where our Open Fabric module is used to offer low-cost, long-haul connectivity and grooming. Our success is built on a well-diversified customer and product mix. Our solutions are very competitive. We have won numerous new accounts to offset the global recession that we have been facing for the last 6 months. The expansion of our footprint in the global network infrastructure is of long-term importance as we are laying the foundation to further compensate any further weakness of the markets moving into 2021. Finally, I want to say a few words about deglobalization, a trend that is having a significant impact on our industry. As early as 2019, we had already started to rebalance our value creation outside of China in response to U.S. trade policy. These measures were costly, but gave us additional flexibility and agility. And they made us less vulnerable to regional lockdown regulations faced throughout the COVID-19 crisis. We will continue to evolve the strategy of global value creation into Europe and the U.S., thus lessening global dependencies. And finally, we take our brand promise to be a resourceful network innovator and trusted partner very seriously. Customers value our reliability, creativity, and ability to work closely with them on the network build-outs. The trend towards more local value creation is positive for us and provides additional tailwind. My last thought is on sustainability and the role ADFA is playing to support our planet. We continue to win awards and commit to ever more stringent carbon emissions output. Our latest commitment to the Science-Based Target Initiative is for us to drop our carbon emissions by 4% each year over the coming decade. We lead by cooking up the best technology solutions in our market segment, and we are responsible for cleaning up after we have finished the creation of our gourmet solutions and delights, just like we all act in our own kitchen. And with that, I gladly hand over to Uli for the financial segment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian, and welcome, everybody. I will now guide you through our Q3 financial results. As already stated in the beginning of this call, revenues in Q3 2020 amounted to €146.7 million and were slightly up from €144.3 million in Q3 2019. There are two important things I want to highlight regarding our Q3 revenues. Firstly, the impact of COVID-19-driven supply constraints in Q3 was smaller than in the previous two quarters, and we started to catch up with the previously mentioned delayed shipments. And secondly, the FX effect due to the weaker US dollar translated to about 4 million lower revenues. When we look at our cost of goods sold, here, of course, we benefited from the weaker US dollar, but also from the US tariffs due to the relocation of production facilities out of China, which helps us to offset some of the still much higher than normal freight costs. Consequently, pro forma gross profit contribution increased to 51.9 million euros, up from 49.1 million in the year ago quarter. On the OPEX side, our cost improvement measures introduced in 2019 continued to show the expected effects, and combined with the lower discretionary spending, we managed to achieve a pro forma operating margin of 7.5%, up from 5.1% in Q3 2019. Net income for the quarter was €6.7 million compared to €2.2 million in the year ago quarter. Consequently, earnings per share increased from 4 to 13 cents year over year. Please keep in mind that Q3 2019 was negatively affected by 2.5 million one-off expenses due to the introduced cost improvement measures. Net debt, including IFRS 16, improved from 74.9 million in Q3 2019 to 35 million. The strong cash flow generation in 2020 increased our cash position by roughly €30 million year over year. Next slide, please. Quarterly revenue and pro forma profitability. Demand developed according to our expectations, and revenues have reached €146.7 million, an improvement of 1.6% compared to the year-ago quarter and up by 1.1% from €145 million in Q2 2020. Gross margin further improved from 34.6% seen in Q2 2020 to 35.4%, mainly due to the effects I explained on the previous slide. Pro forma EBIT margin improved from 7% in the previous quarter to 7.5%. Compared to the year-ago quarter, pro forma EBIT increased significantly by 50%. Turning to the balance sheet. Q3 2020 credit metrics remained strong with an equity ratio of 49.3%. The further improved gross leverage of 1.0 in Q3 2020 came down from 1.1 in the previous quarter. This indicates a solid investment grade profile. Thanks to the strong free cash flow generation of €11.2 million in Q3, we were able to repay €5 million of our revolving credit facility in addition to our standard repayments and still maintain our cash balance. Year over year, cash and cash equivalents significantly increased by around €30 million. Liabilities to banks were €73.7 million and IFRS lease liabilities were €29.6 million and make up our total financial debt of €103.3 million. Further credit lines are available if needed. Our working capital improved from €127.9 million in Q2 2020 to €124 million and represented 21.3% of revenues in Q3. Our year-to-date ROCE was 5.1% and ROCE for the quarter was at a record level of 10.4%. Turning to the quarterly operating cash flow development. As mentioned in the past, our operating cash flow is subject to a certain seasonality due to recurring events, in particular employee-related costs in Q1 and Q3. In Q3, operating cash flow continued to be strong with €25.1 million and improved by 178% year over year. This is mainly due to higher earnings and the aforementioned improved working capital. Next and final slide, please. Over the last 9 months, we learned a lot about to best maneuver in the boundary conditions caused by the pandemic. Despite various bottlenecks and challenges in parts of our production and supply chains, we have managed to service our customer orders, although sometimes with delays. The partial relocation of production facilities out of China in response to the US trade policy gave us additional flexibility and agility and made us less vulnerable to regional lockdown regulations. The revenues with CSPs were comparatively strong in the first 6 months of 2020 as home office, the increased use of e-learnings or video platforms, and other related trends resulted in a significantly higher network utilization. However, we already pointed out that we might experience pockets of slowdown in demand from this customer group in the second half of the year. Further, we remain cautious about our business with large enterprise customers. In some industries, the economic uncertainty is leading to a slowdown in IT investments. The evolving second wave of infections in many countries is worrying and makes the impact on our business once again more difficult to predict. However, with 10 weeks left in the quarter, we want to provide you with the current outlook for the remaining financial year. Therefore, we decided to issue a revised guidance for the full year 2020. We now expect revenues between 565 million and 580 million euros and a pro forma operating income of between 5 and 6% of revenues. This revised guidance assumes that the impact of the pandemic on our business will not significantly worsen beyond the levels we have already experienced in the past. As a reminder, originally we had anticipated revenues to exceed 580 million euros with a pro forma operating income above 5% of revenues. Thank you, and now I hand over to the operator to open the Q&A session.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we'll begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. Your questions will be answered in the order they are received. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. And one moment for the first question, please. And the first question comes from the line of Simon Scholes of First Berlin. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. I've just got one. You were referencing your largest US competitor earlier on in the call. And it looks to me that on the basis of his guidance and your guidance, you expect to be gaining market share in the latter months of this year from that US competitor. You've talked about product wins. Obviously, your geographical exposure is different. I was just wondering if you could give some additional color on your view as to where those market share gains are coming from.
Sure. But clearly, we're not taking market share from Ciena. It's a totally different animal than ADFA. But we technology innovation leaders. We have picked our battles and areas where we think we can, you know, win new customers. And essentially what we're doing in order to right now maybe outperform the market, we still don't really know from a global market perspective where that, you know, TAM is and the growth of that TAM, because there are many different information factors out there. But we're able to win enough, you know, smaller deals, medium-sized deals, to compensate for some of the slowness that we're seeing in the U.S. market or at particular CSPs. So again, I would never venture to say that we're taking any market share from the big boys, but ADFA is doing well to guide our path. And I feel like we have the opportunity to continue to do that, but we're going to have to work overtime to make that happen as long as the economy remains fairly weak.
Okay. Thanks very much.
The next question is from the line of Michael Junkins of Commerzbank. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my question, gentlemen. So I would like to know about a little bit about the change in the current revenue dynamics what you mentioned. So because in 2019, if I see here, we could see that revenue dynamics, they gained in momentum as you went from Q3 into Q4. Could you elaborate a little bit on the increased headwinds you are currently observing on your demand outlook with respect to, for instance, regions, and why some of your customer groups would now become more restricted on spending their remaining CapEx budgets now in Q4? Thank you.
So two aspects of that. One, we've said, and I think the industry as a whole has supported our thinking, and that is people flushed spend in Q1 and beginning of Q2 when they were worried about supply chains being disrupted from the pandemic. So we've been announcing that and talking about that for the last 6 months. And so that's one aspect of it. I think we as an industry face is there's not necessarily more money out there. In fact, if anything, I think there'll be more conservative budget planning by the CSPs in particular regions, because we're in a recession, and in a recession, there are less customers and the models change. So that's one aspect of it. We haven't committed to say that Q4 is a slowdown at all to Q3. What we said is that orders slowed down in Q3. But on the year to date, we're doing well. That was my statements in my presentation. And as long as Q4 turns out to be a normal uptick from the Q3, ADFA will be doing very well. But we can't sit here today and say that's going to happen, because there's a lot of people worried about Q4. And I think we've been conservative from day one in the pandemic, is to understand there's many moving parts, many factors to look at. And we're guiding, with a larger range because of the fact that there's a lot of moving parts. So I don't think, though, you should conclude that Q4 is then slowing down further or as much. It's just at this point, we don't know that exactly. Having said that, we've done all the things necessary to make sure that Q4 turns out to be a good quarter for us from a profitability and from a cash perspective. So we're very focused on the business, very focused on day-to-day information coming off of the markets, adapting our model, and ADFA is well positioned to exit this pandemic stronger than we entered it. And I think that's the key message I would like to make, instead of trying to guess where the economy is going to go and how our industry is going to respond in Q4.
Yeah, thank you. So I would also like a little bit to know about your business in Europe outside Germany. So we could see some signs of market softness in Q2 this year. Has this demand softening now become a little stronger now in this region outside Germany in Q3 in Europe especially?
So I think our messages were over the last 9 months that yes, Southern Europe was more challenging than it had been in the past, and that has to do with a lot of reasons. But if clearly, the pandemic hit them harder, and their economies, of course, were impacted by that. So that's one aspect of it. And then we're slowly moving through, a weakening U.S., which we had said, strong first halves, slower second half. Having said that, if you really look at, and I made that comment in my presentation, is that the weakness in the U.S. from a numbers perspective is not even that big. From a U.S. dollar perspective, we might even have slight growth. But it being converted back into euros meant that we did have weakness in from a North America. So the answer to your question is, I think right now we'd be most worried about the United States, second most worried about Southern Europe, and we're hoping for continued strength in central DACH regions, Northern Europe, Asia Pacific, because we don't have that much exposure and we're winning some deals there to get further growth from those areas.
Okay, great. Because about Asia Pacific, so I guess your customer concentration is not that high in this region, because I'm wondering a bit know about how sustainable the double-digit growth what you could post so far in this 9 months could be over the next few months. So not sure whether you could give us some kind of hint on how much of revenue is concentrated within your, let's say, top 3, 4, 5 clients here in Asia here.
Well, Lee, do you want to take that, the top 3, 4, 5 customers? And I can talk about Asia while you look at that maybe for a second.
It's very simple. We have a couple of larger customers in the Asian region, and as you said, it's a little bit more fragmented. I would say the success in this region, of course, depends a little bit more on the success in some of these larger customers. Having said that, there's also, of course, enterprise projects which come and go on a regular basis, and sometimes you win a project and you see a spike in that region, and sometimes you don't have it. Then you have lower revenue. But again, it's we have two larger carrier customers in that region, and I guess a big portion of the revenue depends on those customers.
Adding to that, sync and timing is strong in that region. We're winning a lot of deals, also to tier ones, tier twos. We hope to be able to leverage that with some of our other products. Once you have a contract or a partner in place, it's easier, but it's still a big challenge. And of all the regions, probably hardest for us to forecast, because we don't have as much breadth. It is very price competitive, and decision making is a little bit different in Asia Pacific than it is in the Western world.
Okay, thank you. I will go back to the queue so far. Thanks.
The next question is from Tim Savageaux of Northern Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, or afternoon. Question, Brian, you mentioned more Terraflex wins, and I wanted to kind of focus on that for a moment and see if you might be able to provide us with any additional color on kind of the magnitude of that that product line for you, either in terms of how that's grown throughout the year, where it stands in terms of revenue contribution and materiality, and overall what sort of demand you're seeing among either cloud or carrier providers for, very high speed solutions, right? 600, 800 gig, 1.2 terabit, what have you. Thanks.
So we're experiencing, in the beginning, there was a lot of discussions with an ad. So this product's only made for a couple big boys because it's so scaled. Our Terraflex in a 1RU, it's this massive scale. So, 3.6 terabit in a 1RU chassis, wow, who can actually use that kind of capacity? And days go by and weeks go by, months go by, and bandwidth keeps growing, and all of a sudden, we're selling Terraflex into a large portion of our customer base at this point. So it's starting, moving out beyond just the opportunity at the big cloud guys into many different opportunities for us. And so slowly but surely that's growing. So, millions of dollars will go to into the tens of millions here shortly. It's making a difference for us in a bigger way. We haven't won one of the bigger players with that product, as otherwise you would see that in our numbers. Our success is broad-based, very distributed, slowly, strengthening our gross margins. So lots of good things, and naturally we'd want one of the big players with our Terraflex. We think our solution is fantastic, but because of some technology upscales changing, some of things happening that you know very well, 400 gig ZR, open systems, all sorts of things that are transforming buying patterns, means that there are decisions going on out there in this space that ultimately we'd all like to win. And we'll see just, what our chances are of winning a bigger footprint. Terraflex is moving along, new features, new data rates, new cost points, a very rich roadmap. We find it, very, very competitive against all other offerings. I've been saying this for a long time, that whole 400, 600, 800, 1.2 gig discussion is just secondary. And there are many other things that are influencing purchasing patterns. Again, what are we talking about? Some of the competitive position is 400 gig ZR, not you know, we talk about 800 gig, but actually maybe some of the big boys even go a different direction, and it's just a module at 400 gig. So, you know, there's a lot going on. We're doing well with the TeraFlex. It's influencing our sales numbers nicely. It's moving up, moving out to many customers, and we see it as a very competitive platform going forward.
Yeah, that's great color, and thank you for that. And just to follow up on that quickly, and I have one more question. But I wonder if you can give us a sense. Well, it sounds like you're saying that there's maybe a, for the big cloud guys in particular, there's kind of a range of technology options facing them, whether it's new 800 gig technology, pluggables, what have you. Now, along with, you know, what we've seen as a trend toward kind of maintaining status quo, adding more capacity in terms of what's installed and operationalized, and maybe, you know, waiting until next year to address some of these new technologies. It sounds like you're saying that's maybe delaying decision making. I mean, is there a sort of a time frame that you're focused on when some of these larger architectural commitments on the part of the big cloud guys get made next year?
Again, the larger guys, they're not all aligned in the same path forward. There's 600 gig, 800 gig, 400 gig ZR, open systems. There's a lot going on. Just, you know, do a little bit of what we've already done at 400 gig. There's a whole slew of strategies out there. And I just think, you know, it's evolving, and we'll see really the models that gain the most strength. There's, you know, own built systems, you know, discussions about building own systems for highly scaled players. So there's a lot, as you say, Tim, of, let's say, optionality, and ADFA is competing for a number of pieces that we can compete for. We can't compete for everything, but compete for, and we hope to grow that space. But, you know, there'll be ups and downs. We're not dependent on it. It's one of our three customer segments that we've, you know, addressing. It's one of two that's been doing pretty well, even through the pandemic. And yes, we have lots of technology that's been designed that could be used by them very effectively. And not just standard optical stuff, but also timing, fiber monitoring, you know, other pieces that we're looking at bringing into those organizations to address their needs.
Great. And last one for me, and this is, you know, kind of an ADVA financial specific question, you know, and some further improvements in gross margins in the quarter, and just overall profitability. You know, part of that is, you know, OPEX control. But either in Q3 or if you look kind of what's implicit in your annual guide in Q4, you know, margins look to be increasing there as well. I wonder if you can maybe differentiate between what might be, you know, gross margin expansion expected there and further, you know, versus further OPEX control, and in general, discuss gross margin dynamics given your comments around weakness on the cloud side. That's a higher margin business. So it seems like you've had some reasonably good mix thus far this year. I wonder if that remains the case, and you expect gross margins to expand further in Q4.
So I guess I start. I would assume similar gross margin in Q4. And I mean, what's driving the gross margin? Of course, it's, as always, customer and product mix, regional mix. But then, I mean, we're working hard on getting our costs down and cost reduction programs. And then on top of that, you have now, especially in the second half of the year, you know, you have the weakness of the US dollar that will help us. We spoke about the relocation of production out of China in order to keep tariffs into the US down or low. And then we are still fighting, you know, and hoping going forward to improve our gross margin further when freight costs normalize. So they're still by a factor of two higher than in normal times. But overall, again, I would expect a similar gross margin going into Q4. Could be a little higher, could be a little lower, but then that should be in that magnitude. On the OPEX side, On the OpEx side, I guess there was a second part, half of your question. I would assume OpEx to go down slightly in Q4. I guess one important message, and we spoke about that last in the last quarter, there was a question last quarter, was in regards to the earnings based on capital, R&D capitalization. And so currently, we always said in the second half of the year, this should level out the capitalization and the amortization effect. We still have small gains or smaller gains in Q3, but this should reverse in Q4. So we should be almost zero in the second half of the year when it comes to EBIT effect of the R&D capitalization. So far, for the first 9 months of the year, we basically are roughly half of the R&D net cap effect then compared to last year. So all the R&D capitalization already makes a smaller impact on our profits this year than last year.
Got it. Thanks.
As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad. And the next question is from John of Vertical. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, you can.
Oh, great. Sorry, thanks. I wanted to start out just with a clarification. My recollection was, and I'm just going to go back a little here. My recollection was calendar Q2, there was a shift of, I think, perhaps 10 million euro from Q1 as COVID-related implications. My further recollection was between Q2 and Q3, there was something on the order of 15 million euro expected. It sounded like during the prepared remarks that was perhaps smaller, but I'm wondering, can you just refresh my memory on that cadence? And then I'm wondering what the implication between calendar Q3 and calendar Q4 is. Was there any of that activity that extends beyond the third quarter?
So your recollection is correct. We had about 10 million of revenues moved out of from Q1 into Q2 and about 15 from Q2 into Q3. However, last quarter we already said that it's getting a little bit more blurry. So we definitely had some supply issues in Q3 as well, and we probably weren't able to ship 8 to 10 million, but it's difficult for us to say, is this now based on COVID? You know, it was easy for us to say in Q1 because we could easily say Wuhan was shut down, so we didn't get our supply there. Now, the entire supply chain is much more complex, much more fragmented, and it's a little bit more difficult for us to say, is this now based on COVID or is it just based on a normal constraint for certain components or in certain regions? So it's a little bit difficult to say, but think about the magnitude was about up to 10 million, I would say, that we weren't able to ship or invoice in Q3, based on what sort of supply constraints ever.
Okay, gotcha. That's helpful. And then my second question, just geographically, can you remind me, my understanding, or at least historically, was most of your ICP exposure is within North America. Is that still kind of a fair characterization, or is that a bit more geographically diverse?
Well, we view it that way, but they're global companies, so you can also break that down differently, but the decision-making is done out of the United States. So yes, the ICP decision-making is done out of the United States, and we attributed that to the team in the United States, but we do break that down then when we know things are shipping in other places, other regions.
Okay, gotcha. And then I suppose my two broader questions are, if you think about the places where you're seeing demand pause, so use like maybe North American service provider is perhaps the prism here. I'm wondering your view on sort of duration and perhaps implication to 2021. I realize it's probably too early to talk about next year, but can you just discuss for a second the cross currents? And I think you highlighted them. Obviously, on the one side, there's business pressure. On the other side, there's network pressure. So I'm wondering, do you think that, you just talk a little about how perhaps you think these things resolve as we look out into 2021.
I guess there's, for me, two aspects of it. One is the actual, you know, use of budget in 2020, where people panicked a little bit and then flushed some early in the year and now pulling back. That's one thing happening in the United States. The second thing that's happened in the United States is that this massive 5G rollout, T-Mobile's changing the world, and you got people like Verizon and AT&T responding to that, which means they're shifting dollars and spend into 5G infrastructure rolls out. So that can have an impact on optical, right? If you might do less optical core investment dollars, you still invest in optical and packet and, let's say, backhauling, what you mid-hauling and front-hauling, but it is less dollars probably spent relatively to the total dollars spent when you start shifting like that. And that, to me, is maybe a year to 2 year discussion. And you guys need to do more work on that with Verizon and AT&T as they respond to T-Mobile, who's going crazy, blazing guns to win the 5G war. And so, again, two different issues, both need to be managed. I would think the budget issue, and let's say the front-end loaded thing, that ends with January 1st. You have pretty healthy balance sheets in the United States because you have more consolidation. And therefore, I would imagine that budgets start to flow up again starting in Q1 already. And if you underinvested in the second half, then maybe even starts to get healthy again in the first half of next year. But the bigger issue might be that 5G focused spending, at least with the two or three big guys. And that means people that are exposed to those people have an added challenge to read that, and deal with that going forward.
Really helpful. Growing,
ultimately, it catches up again, right?
Right. No, sorry to interrupt you. Really helpful. The other thing I wanted to just have you talk a bit about is within your enterprise. My recollection is that financial services as a vertical is relatively important, I think, in the context of enterprise in total, which is perhaps a quarter of your business. So can you just remind me if I'm correct on that? And then if you could talk a bit about perhaps that vertical within the trending you're seeing in enterprise, is that behaving materially differently from, say, the balance of your enterprise customer group?
So, enterprise. Now, that's a complex one, right? Because we do our packet world's very dependent on the enterprise world again, but it's more of a resale through the service provider into the enterprise space. So let's talk about our direct selling to enterprises, and that's with partners, and it's usually large enterprises. So that, that 25% that you indicated, because we're actually exposed indirectly more. One of the challenges that we've had this year is two of our three tripod legs are outperforming optical and synchronization, but the edge cloud or the packet areas has underperformed some because of weakness in that small to medium-sized enterprise segment. In the large enterprise segment, finance is an important piece of it. And if you look at the industry right now, the sense is financials continue to spend nicely, and you guys are reading the analyst reports as well, and we're realizing this personally, that financial companies have to spend. Our spending will spend on IT, are trying to drive up efficiencies, get rid of employees, change business models, et cetera, et cetera. So IT is fundamentally important for them for that transformational change to digitize their worlds. So that's good. Then you things like government, government, federal especially, is investing. And in Europe, most of it is federal. Versus in the United States, you have this federal state, states usually spend a lot, but they're weak. Federal still strong. So you've got certain verticals. We think energy comes back fast and nice very quickly because they've got contribution network challenges. So they need to spend for transformational change, but you're going to have places like retail, travel, leisure, and other pieces that are going to suffer some. Car industry is one of those suffering in the big picture. We do a lot of business with the car industry as a whole, but that's one that people have pulled back on as the world's changing there. So, to answer, finance, good, important for us. We're well positioned, it's stable. This, again, is not the biggest market that we address. Enterprise, a much smaller market space than carriers and or the ICPs, clearly, but we do very well there. And in fact, we've added a number of solutions to go after that space, sync and timing for one as an example, but also even packet as we move into that space. We're in it, but moving it and try to broaden our penetration into that space.
Gotcha. Sorry, can I just clarify, not to put words in your mouth, but would it be fair to characterize perhaps your enterprise caution as federal and financial okay, all other kind of bearing the brunt of perhaps the slowdown?
I would say federal, yes, financial, energy, or I'd say government, because in Europe it's not this federal thing.
Sure.
Government as good to go, and will continue investing, and all others are struggling. Having said that, the large enterprise don't cut back as hard. The small to mediums are cutting back harder.
Gotcha. Okay, I'm sorry. I have one last one. Hopefully, it's very quick. Could you speak a bit about inventory? You have not brought it down much, and there's obviously all kinds of concerns, or there appear to be recently, about availability issues again. I'm wondering what your sort of penchant is going forward. Are you looking to restock? Are you looking to carry excess levels of certain things, all things? Just as you think about inventory and any implications to cash flows, you think about the next couple of quarters, can you just talk about your mindset?
So,
you start, I follow up.
Well, I think, sourcing of components, there's certain things that have been a struggle, but in general, we're doing better than 6 months ago. There's still a struggle on certain areas, but I don't think we have to fundamentally stock up across the board. I think there's certain projects and customers where we need to build more buffer and build more capability, but it's definitely not across the board. So how that works out, from a planning COO, CFO planning, I'll leave to Uli to answer.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it, we brought the inventory down quite a bit. We saw last year, if you recall, we increased quite a bit due to the U.S. tariffs, where we tried to pre-purchase and move stuff over to the U.S. Also, in regards to Brexit, we increased our stock levels by about 10 to 15 million last year. So now we are, third quarter, we are still below, we are 5-6 million below last year, end of the third quarter. So I would assume, we're managing our inventory tightly and our cash tightly, and we should not. My goal is not to increase inventory drastically based on component issues or so. So we will, we learned a lot during the pandemic, and I said, supply chain is more complex and more fragmented, and but every month we're learning and we're getting better and better, and so I would not assume that our inventory levels will increase over the next couple of quarters drastically.
Oh, great. That's really helpful. Sorry for taking all the time. I appreciate your help.
And this concludes the question and answer session. I hand back to Mr. Brian Protiva for closing comments.
Well, I'd like to thank you for all the great questions. I hope it makes things more transparent. And go, Adva. And appreciate you guys joining the call. Thank you.